Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, November 30th, 2021. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline in today's paper is Reingans to lead Keystone AEA, Dubuque School Superintendent to resign from post on June 30th, by Allie Hinga. The Dubuque Community Schools Superintendent will leave his post this summer after being named the next Chief Administrator of Keystone Area Education Agency. Stan Reingans will remain at the helm of the Dubuque District until June 30th and will step into the new role on July 1. He will succeed current Chief Administrator Pat Heiderschett, who is retiring. At the AEA, Reingans will support 224 employees to provide special education and school improvement services in Alamakee, Chickasaw, Clayton, Delaware, Dubuque, Fayette, Howard, and Winnesee counties, a press release states. The agency serves 21 public school districts and 27 non-public schools with about 32,000 kindergarten through 12th grade students. The AEA also serves children ages 3 and younger. I'm really excited about the opportunity to continue to work with Dubuque Community Schools, but also to work with small rural schools and everything in between, Reingans said. As hard as it is to leave Dubuque, I think the excitement of being able to work closely with all of those school districts is something that I'm excited to take on. Meanwhile, members of the Dubuque Community School Board quickly will begin the search for his replacement. We want to get ahead of the game as much as we can, but I feel very confident that Dubuque is in a very good position to receive some good quality candidates, said Board President Tammy Ryan. Reingans has served as superintendent of the Dubuque District since 2012 and previously served as the district's executive director of human resources. On Monday, he said moving to the Keystone role was a logical progression for his career, noting that he will have the chance to work with a large number of districts to support them and help them meet their goals. I have been superintendent here for 10 years, and I think change is good for organizations as well as for people, Reingans said. I think that for 10 years, it's been my honor and privilege to be the superintendent here, and I am looking forward to this to be the next 10 years of my career. Reingans will be paid a salary of $219,000 in his new role, according to the AEA board minutes. His current salary is $225,120. Nancy Bradley, who is a member of both the Dubuque School Board and the Keystone Board of Directors, participated in the hiring process for Reingans to join the AEA. She noted that Keystone leaders received 21 applications for the position, narrowing the pool to 7 semifinalists and then 3 finalists. Ultimately, board members voted unanimously to hire Reingans, Bradley said. She said Reingans' experience working both in large and small school districts over the course of his career set him apart as a candidate, as did his advocacy for public education in Iowa and his focus on children. For Stan, it's about kids, Bradley said. It was so obvious throughout the interview process. There were countless opportunities for him to speak for himself. Instead, he spoke of his team and his work on behalf of students. Still, she said, hiring Reingans to his new role was bittersweet, as it will mark the end of his tenure with the Dubuque District. It will be very hard shoes to fill, Bradley said. Already, board members are readying to start the process of finding Reingans' successor. At a school board meeting today, members will examine what they need to do to amend Reingans' contract so he can be released to his new position when it starts. Board members will start digging into details of the search process at the meeting of their Facilities and Support Services Committee next week. Ryan said board members aim to name Reingans' successor well before he leaves, so the transition is a smooth one. She thinks the leadership of Reingans and his team has positioned the district in such a way that the superintendent position will be sought after. Ryan also said she appreciated Reingans' leadership and collaboration over his time as superintendent, as well as his work with the board to develop a strategic plan and his skills as a communicator. The community was able to have a lot of confidence in the decisions the superintendent did make, she said. Whether they agreed with them or not, at least they knew his thought process, and he didn't make decisions unilaterally. Reingen said the decision to leave the Dubuque School District after 18 years was an emotional one. He said he hopes his legacy with the district is building a team and empowering the people to make decisions based on what is best for students. The team here at Dubuque Community School District is second to none, so I'm proud to leave for the next person, whoever they are, a highly functional district with a great team of professionals that will help that person transition into their role as superintendent, he said. The next story is Maquoketa Store Sells Big Box Items at Reduced Prices by Jeff Montgomery. A new Maquoketa business is offering items at discounted prices that are typically found in big box stores. The Bargain Bin opened its doors at 18035 Iowa 64 on Friday. Owner Josh Muse explained that the store sells a variety of products ranging from clothes and toys to car parts and home decor that originally were intended to be sold via big box chains. Bargain Bin sells items that were returned to retailers, were transported in damaged boxes, or were overstocked. Muse said a wide range of goods are available through these channels, which results in customers having a lot to choose from. We have a little bit of everything, and we get in new inventory every week, he said. Items are sold at a fraction of their normal cost, with price reductions ranging from 20 to 90%. Muse is no stranger to filling this economic niche. He already operates a similar store in Tipton, Iowa, and hopes to launch a third store in the near future. Muse began leasing his storefront in Maquoketa a couple of weeks ago and scrambled to get the new business open in time for the holiday shopping season. That strategy is paying dividends. I'm very excited that we got it open as quickly as we did, he said. We have a lot of things here that would make for a great Christmas, and I think a lot of people are excited to shop with us for the holiday season. The Bargain Bin is open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Thursday, and 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday. It is closed on Sunday and Monday. After more than half a decade in operation, a Cascade business intends to expand into a new location next summer. Wisteria Lane, currently located at 227 First Avenue West, plans to move into a location across the street in June, according to owner Jennifer Breitbach. The business opened in 2015 and currently offers esthetician services, massage therapy, and alternative therapies, including Reiki. Once the business relocates, it will begin to offer a wide range of new services, including classes that focus on yoga and meditation. The company also will have a sauna and a salt room dedicated to halotherapy, Breitbach said. She noted that her business, which now operates largely on a by-appointment basis, will introduce consistent hours and focus more on retail offerings such as essential oils, lotions, and other small gifts. This will be a great chance to bring in new people and offer new things to the community, she said. The upcoming expansion marks another chapter in Breitbach's lengthy journey in her industry. She got her start working part-time as a massage therapist, then later worked at a spa in Monticello, Iowa, before deciding to open her business in Cascade. I eventually came to the point where I wanted to do something on my own, to start a business of my own, she recalled. Breitbach said she plans to rebrand and rename her business in conjunction with next year's move. Her current location will remain open until the new one commences operations. Wisteria Lane can be reached at 563-852-3347. Nutrition business opens. A trio of close friends is bringing healthy teas and shakes to Kennedy Mall in Dubuque. Purpose Nutrition opens its doors in the mall on Friday. Co-owner Madison Keck noted that launching the business on Black Friday made for quite the opening. We were extremely busy throughout the day, she said. We couldn't have asked for anything more. It was a great way to start. Purpose Nutrition serves protein-based shakes, meal replacement shakes, and energizing tea drinks. Keck operates the business with her close friends, Brianna Slaymaker and Emma Freiberger. The three met while they were working together in a similar business in Dubuque named West End Nutrition, which is located along John F. Kennedy Road. That location, which is owned by Slaymaker, remains in operation. CAC is confident that the Kennedy Mall location, which is located next to Shoe Carnival, will generate a lot of foot traffic. It's a great atmosphere where we will always be seeing a lot of new faces, she said. One of the added perks to the job is working along Slaymaker and Freiberger. Some people say don't work with your friends, but I don't think that applies to us, CAC said. We enjoy all of the time that we spend together. Purpose Nutrition is among multiple locally owned businesses that have opened within the mall. Others include Captured on Canvas, Glam Vaganza, Nerd HQ, and Tech Corner. Purpose Nutrition is open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday and 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. And the last story from the front page is Nysum, Northeast Iowa School of Music, strikes a sweet note. School offers discounted lessons to low-income families, by John Cruz. With a smile, 9-year-old Nyaya Lee took a seat at the bench and put her hands to the keys of a black grand piano. Her fingers began to flick and dance, producing the melody of her favorite song, Twister. "It's fun to play and easy to memorize," Naya said. "I love that one." For the duration of the short performance, the smile never left her face. For the past 2 years, Naya has been learning how to play piano at Northeast Iowa School of Music in Dubuque. Part of the school's mission is making the joy of learning an instrument as accessible to as many people as possible. And for school officials, Naya is a sign that the mission is a success. Throughout her time at the school, Naya also has been the recipient of a scholarship for low and moderate income students. "Accessibility is very important for us," said David Resnick, a Dubuque City Council member who is the executive director of Nysum. "We have parents who call and say they would love to have their kids take lessons, but it's too expensive. These scholarships make those lessons affordable." City Council members this month voted unanimously to allocate $3,000 in community development block grant money to fund the scholarships to low and moderate income students, continuing what has been years of commitment to the program by the city as part of its mission to promote recreation and arts in the community. While the appeal of music is universal, the ability for students to learn and play music for themselves is not. The National Assessment of Educational Progress found that only 9% of 8th grade students who qualify for free or reduced lunch as part of the National School Lunch Program take private music lessons outside of school, while 29% play a musical instrument on their own outside of school. That compares to 17% of 8th graders who do not qualify for the lunch program that take private lessons and 40% that play an instrument on their own. Resnick, who voted in favor of directing funds to Nysum, said the school has partnered with the city and other private donors for several years to fund scholarships that make music lessons affordable for low-income residents and has found continued interest from students who want to learn to play an instrument but cannot afford to pay the traditionally high costs of music lessons. A full year of lessons at the school, consisting of 30-minute lessons, costs $900. Resnick said scholarships provided by Nysum can cut these costs by as much as half. While the city assists in funding the scholarship program, local residents also have contributed to funding music education for low-income children outside of the city limits. In 2017, the Ryan Scholarship Fund was established in memory of Leroy and Marion Ryan, covering the full tuition of one student each year who previously was not taking private lessons for financial reasons. No matter where the money comes from, the scholarships give residents opportunities to play music who previously couldn't afford to. "To me, Music is really important because I want to be able to make people happy and have them enjoy what I play, said Brielle Richardson, a 2020 Hempstead High School graduate who is a first-year student at NYSEM and a scholarship recipient. I really like my classes at NYSEM, and I love learning new songs. This year, Resnick said the student scholarship program is supporting tuitions for 17 students, one-tenth of the total lessons given at the school. Michelle Lawrence, Naya's mother, said she is thankful that the school has allowed her daughter to begin learning music at a young age. I think it's great how young they start them, Lawrence said. It's really been great for her. And while there is a satisfaction in learning to play Twister, Resnick argued that students benefit in other ways from playing music at an early age. Several studies have found that playing music can improve mathematical and spatial and temporal reasoning, along with increasing overall school performance. There is clear evidence that playing music is good for you, Resnick said. I think it's important that we are able to provide that potential benefit to everyone. Turning to page 2, this story is titled Sunnycrest Vaccine Mandate on Hold by Benjamin Fisher. The Dubuque County Board of Supervisors on Monday night was set to vote on a mandatory COVID-19 vaccine policy for a county-owned nursing home, but a federal judge in Missouri halted the plan earlier in the day. The policy for Sunnycrest Manor was designed to comply with both the Biden administration's order that facilities accepting Medicaid or Medicare require vaccinations, barring sincere religious or medical exemptions, among staff, as well as the state of Iowa's new law that aimed to soften that mandate. Sunnycrest staff would have had to receive either their first shot or an exemption by December 5th. But earlier in the day, U.S. District Judge Matthew Shelp, issued a temporary injunction blocking the order from being enforced in 10 states, including Iowa, that sued the federal government to kill the order. So the Dubuque County supervisors made no move to approve the policy when it came up during their meeting. That left Sunnycrest Administrator Danny Edema waiting until it can be approved. We have to have our policy in place in case the order plays out in court quickly, she told the Telegraph Herald. At Sunnycrest, 82% of 147 staff members are fully vaccinated, with two more having received only their first dose. We have a few who just got their first shot with that December date coming because they wanted to get ahead of it, Adama said. That leaves 24 employees completely unvaccinated. We will obviously ask them to either get vaccinated or get an exemption, Adama said. But if they don't, we will have to decide whether we put them on administrative leave or we have to terminate. The policy proposed Monday night included the forms for religious and health exemptions, which means Edema also cannot begin distributing an official form yet. The county supervisors agreed to vote on those forms separately at their next meeting. Edema said that if, or when, the federal order does take effect, it will have a negative impact on workforce. How bad depends on which department they come from, she said. Nursing will be different than some areas, since we have some vacancies in nursing. CNAs, like all over the country. But staff has been great about moving departments to help. Workforce problems was listed as a reason for the injunction by the judge. Locally, that is true in other nursing homes as well. At Stonehill Communities, 81% of staff are now vaccinated, up from around 75% in August. But Administrator Peg Stockel said Monday that the facility has had to close wings designed to hold 40 residents due to staffing shortages. The vaccine has worked, she said. People might still get COVID, but they are not nearly as sick. But when CMS issued this mandate, we were already in a workforce crisis. Dubuque police say use of online reporting tool lagging since launch. Low-value property crimes can be reported 24/7 through an online form by Eric Hogstrom. A new way for Dubuque residents to report lesser property crimes has yet to gain traction. Dubuque police announced in August that theft and criminal damage incidents that occur within the city with a loss of less than $300 and no known suspects could be reported online at cityofdubuque.org/police. The online form can be submitted instead of meeting with an officer. We haven't seen it utilized as much as we had anticipated, and we'd like to see people utilize it more, said Lieutenant Ted McClemon. Police hope that the online reporting tool would streamline the process for residents and officers. The big thing is the convenience, being able to do it anytime, day or night, from home, without having to have an officer come to your home or work, McClemon said. The tool is intended only for minor property crimes that have a relatively low chance of being solved because of a lack of suspect. And after an online report is filed, the residents will receive an email with a reference number for the case, which can be used for insurance purposes. Some people may still be in the mindset that they need to call in the crime to dispatch, and some people may prefer to talk to an officer too, McClemon said. Police instituted other forms of online reporting earlier, including links for residents to submit tips, to request additional attention in a specific neighborhood, or to seek additional traffic enforcement on a specific roadway. We are seeing an increase in the past year in these online requests, McClemon said. He said some people could be hesitant to report low-level property crimes. A large percentage of such crimes go unreported when there is a low dollar amount, he said. But there is a benefit for both residents and us to have it reported. By reporting them, you always have that tracking number on file, and it's easier for investigators if it is reported in a timely manner. City spokesman Randy Guile said use of an online system to report various municipal issues has remained steady on the city's website, cityofdubuque.org. Under the Report a Concern tab on the website, users can request alley and street maintenance, report bushes hanging over sidewalks, report dangerous animals, and submit information on other issues. The tools have streamlined the process by giving residents another way to report issues, Gale said. Rather than calling or trying to connect with city staff during business hours, they can report issues or submit requests 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The information goes directly to the appropriate department and designated staff person. Additionally, the city's My Dubuque app also allows residents to report issues, submit requests, and attach photos from their smartphones. Turning to the News in Brief column, Dubuque County man accused of multiple sexual assaults. Dateline, Dyersville, Iowa. Authorities said a Dubuque County man twice sexually assaulted a minor and videotaped other sexual acts without the girl's knowledge. Logan E. Southwick, 19, of Dyersville, was arrested at 5:23 a.m. Monday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on a warrant charging two counts of third-degree sexual abuse, sexual exploitation of a minor, possession of a depiction of a minor in a sexual act, invasion of privacy, and dissemination and exhibition of obscene material to a minor. Court documents state that Southwick sexually assaulted the girl at a residence in Dyersville and in a vehicle parked on a back road between Farley and Dyersville in November 2020 and around July, respectively. The Telegraph Herald does not provide identifying information for victims of alleged sexual crimes. The girl told authorities that there were times that she was having consensual sexual intercourse with Southwick and when he videotaped the encounter without her knowledge, according to documents. The girl said Southwick sent the videos to her cell phone as well as multiple explicit photos and videos of himself. The photos and videos were located on her cell phone, according to documents. Authorities were granted a search warrant for Southwick's cell phone and other items. The videos and photo were not found on his cell phone as he had deleted the girl from all his accounts, documents state. Police. One injured in 7 vehicle wreck on Icy Dubuque Highway. Police said one person was hurt in crashes involving seven vehicles on an icy stretch of Dubuque roadway Saturday morning. Tony K. Belha, 52, of Hazel Green, Wisconsin, was taken by ambulance to Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center for treatment of her injuries, according to a Dubuque police report. The crash occurred at about 6:45 a.m. Saturday on U.S. 61/151 just east of the area of Admiral Sheehy Drive. Police said vehicles driven by Belha, Craig A. Schiller, 47, of Monticello, Wisconsin, Lisa K. Farber, 41, of East Dubuque, Illinois, Cody J. Haynes, 17, of Benton, Wisconsin, and Deborah E. Drossler, 57, of Cuba City, Wisconsin, and Lynn M. Bodie Yeasel, 58, of Darlington, Wisconsin, as well as a semi-tractor trailer operated by Lendert W. Geisten, 50, of Denver, Colorado, were traveling south on the highway when they lost control on the ice-covered roadway. No citations were issued. Dubuque-based credit union changing its name. A Dubuque-based credit union is changing its name. Alliant Credit Union will become AIM, A-I-M, Credit Union, effective January 1st. A press release states that that name is being changed to reflect the credit union's growth and to avoid confusion with Chicago-based Alliant Credit Union, which was known as United Airlines Credit Union until 2003. Interstate Employees Credit Union changed its name to Alliant Credit Union in 1999 to align with utility company mergers and the change of name from Interstate Power to Alliant Energy. Since its inception 89 years ago, the Dubuque Credit Union's membership has expanded to more than 50 employee groups. The name change will not affect the credit union's members, according to the release. And from the police, the Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Departments reported, Timothy Tillman, 44, of 1600 Butterfield Road, number 115B, was arrested at 9:30 p.m. Sunday at his residence on charges of first-degree harassment, child endangerment, public intoxication, and interference with official acts. Court documents state that Tillman threatened Mariah Johnson, 22, of the same address, in the presence of his 9-year-old son. Turning to the opinion page, we have a letter from the editor by Amy Gilligan, Telegraph Herald Executive Director. It's titled, First Citizen Deadline Near, Book Sale December 9th. Tomorrow marks the deadline for submitting nominations for the Telegraph Herald First Citizen Award, so if you've been meaning to send one in, please do so soon. We were disappointed in January that we couldn't hold our usual First Citizen reception to honor our 2020 recipient, Judy Wolf. Because of the pandemic, we modified our event to include just Judy's immediate family and live-streamed the event for everyone else to watch from home. The live stream was similar to our usual approach, and we were happy to be able to share our celebration of this prestigious award. One modification we made due to the pandemic turned into a cool keepsake, so we've decided to continue that tradition. One of the special parts of the traditional reception is all the friends, relatives, colleagues, and community members who come to offer their congratulations to the recipient. When we realized we wouldn't be able to have that kind of event to honor Judy, we came up with another idea. We asked folks to send their congratulatory message in writing and include a photo if they wanted to. And then we gathered all those well wishes and printed them in a special section of the paper published later in January. It was a neat memento for Judy, and her family and members of the community enjoyed it as well. Even though we have every hope that we will be able to host an in-person event for our 2021 winner, we think the printed section of congratulations was such a positive thing, we plan to do it again this January. The award recipient will be announced January 1st, as usual. Then, community members will have a couple of weeks to submit their congratulations to be published later in the month, coinciding with our first citizen reception. Watch for details in January and plan to help us shower our next First Citizen Award recipient with congratulations. Got gifts? Yes, Yes, we do. If Black Friday and Small Business Saturday and Cyber Monday were all a little much for you, we've got some gifts for you right here at the Telegraph Herald. Stop by or go online Thursday, December 9th and check out our one-day sale featuring 70% off most books, excluding the 50s, 60s, and 70s series. For example, you can get my latest collection of columns, I've Got Four Teenagers You Can't Scare Me, for just $5, and it even fits in a stocking. Lobby hours are 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. The discount online is all day until midnight at telegraphherald.com/store. Other bargain books include Dubuque, The Birthplace of Iowa, Volumes 4 and 5, David Kettering's 1,000 Words, and many other books of local interest. Shop local this holiday season and give the gift of local books. And that was by the executive editor of the Telegraph Herald, Amy Gilligan. You are listening to a reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, November 30th, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now we'll turn to today's obituaries. Michael J. Arthoffer, Piasta, Iowa. Michael J. Mike Arthoffer, age 81, of Piasta, Iowa, completed his earthly journey on Thanksgiving Day, November 25th, 2021, at home while surrounded by his loving family. To honor Mike's life, a graveside service will be held on Wednesday, December 1st, 2021, at 10:30 a.m. at the St. Catherine Cemetery with the Reverend Diane Grace officiating. Full military honors will be accorded by the Dubuque Marine Corps League. The Tri-State Cremation Center is humbly serving Mike's family. Dolores Duhan. Sister Dolores Duhan, BVM, Sarah James, 93, of Mount Carmel Bluffs, 1160 Carmel Drive, Dubuque, Iowa, died Sunday, November 28, 2021. Visitation will be today from 1 to 1:30 p.m. in the Mary Frances Clark Chapel. Rite of committal for natural burial will follow at 1:30 p.m. Burial is in the Mount Carmel Cemetery. Virtual sharing memories will be Thursday, December 2nd, 2021, at 9:30 a.m., followed by a memorial mass at 10:30 a.m. Services on both days are private due to COVID-19 restrictions. All services may be viewed through live video stream at stretchinternet.com/BVMsisters. Mary A. Yeager, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Mary A. Yeager, 91, of Lancaster, died on Saturday, November 27, 2021. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, December 3rd, at Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Lancaster, and from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, December 5th, at St. Clement Catholic Church in Lancaster, where a mass of Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m. A private family burial will be held at a later date. Terry O. Harmon, Des Moines, Iowa. Terry Orlando Harmon, 79, died in Des Moines on November 27, 2021, with his family by his side. A visitation for family and friends will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, December 1st, 2021, at Isles Dunn's Chapel. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, December 2nd, at the funeral home, with burial following at Glendale Cemetery in Des Moines. Deborah K. Stoker, Princeville, Illinois. Deborah K. Stoker, 65, of Princeville, Illinois, passed away peacefully with her family at her side on Thursday, November 18, 2021, at Unity Point Health Methodist Hospital. A celebration of life will be held on December 19, 2021, from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Princeville United Methodist Church Hall, 420 East Wirtz, Princeville. Condolences may be left for Deborah's family on her tribute wall at HaskellFuneral.com. Florence E. Sanders, East Dubuque, Illinois. Florence E. Tina Villapando Ames Sanders, 87, transitioned to heaven to meet her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ at 2:05 a.m. on Saturday, November 27, 2021, at Stonehill Care Center in Dubuque, Iowa. A celebration of her life will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, December 1, 2021, at Word of Life Church, 4450 Dodge Street, Dubuque, Iowa. Burial services will be in the East Dubuque Cemetery. Friends may call from 3 to 6 p.m. on Tuesday, November 30th, at the Miller Funeral Home, East Dubuque, Illinois, and from 9:15 to 9:45 a.m. on Wednesday at Word of Life Church. Per state and CDC guidelines, please wear a face mask. The funeral service will be live streamed on the Miller Funeral Home Group Facebook page. Kenneth E. Hertig, Iowa City, Iowa. Kenneth Eugene Hertig, 80, of Iowa City, formerly of Bellevue, Iowa, passed away on Sunday, November 28, 2021, at home in Iowa City after a long journey with many health complications. Per Ken's wishes, there will be no visitation or funeral services. Randall D. Levins. Randall D. Levins, 63, of Dubuque, died on Wednesday, November 24, 2021. Tri-State Cremation Center of East Dubuque, Illinois, is assisting the family. John J. Thill, Potosi, Wisconsin. John J. Thill, 87, of Potosi, Wisconsin, passed away peacefully at home on Friday, November 26, 2021. Massive Christian burial will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday, December 3, 2021, at St. Andrew's Catholic Church. Tennyson. Father Richard Leffler will officiate. Burial will be at St. Thomas Catholic Cemetery, Potosi, where graveside military rites will be accorded. Friends may call from 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, December 2, 2021, at the church, or from 9:30 a.m. until the time of the service on Friday at the church. The Melby Funeral Home and Crematory, Platteville, is serving the family. Memorials may be made to the John J. Thill Memorial Fund. Online condolences can be made at melbyfh.com. Joan Burning, Galena, Illinois. Joanne Peacock Burning, age 92, of Galena, Illinois, passed into the Lord's presence with loving family by her side on Thanksgiving Day, November 25th, 2021. A celebratory mass will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, December 3rd, 2021, at St. Mary's Catholic Church, Galena, where friends may call after 10 until the time of the mass. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Friends may call from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, December 2nd, 2021, at the Furlong Funeral Chapel, Galena. Randall L. Filer. Randall L. Randy Filer, age 58, of Dubuque, passed away from COVID-19 at 4:45 p.m. on Friday, November 26, 2021, at Unity Point Health, Finley Hospital. To celebrate Randy's life, he wanted to keep all of his friends and family safe from COVID-19 by keeping the gathering small and private. There will be a celebration of his life held at a later date for all of his family and friends to attend. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Mary Jo Wilkie, Monona, Iowa. Mary Jo Wilkie, 88, of Monona, died on Wednesday, November 24, 2021. Visitation will be held from noon to 2 p.m. Friday, December 3rd, at Faith Lutheran Church in Monona, where services will follow. Burial will be in St. Paul Lutheran Cemetery in Monona. Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Monona is assisting the family. Joanne M. Downs, Highland, Illinois. Joanne M. Downs, 67, of Highland, died on Friday, November 26, 2021. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, December 4th, at Law Jones Funeral Home in Mount Carroll, Illinois, where a funeral service will follow. Interment will follow at Oak Hill Cemetery in Mount Carroll. Shirley A. Hrubik, Earlville, Iowa. Shirley A. Hrubik, 77, of Earlville, died on Sunday, November 28, 2021. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, December 4th, at Rife Funeral Home in Dyersville, where services will follow. Burial will be in Fairview Cemetery in Earlville. Karen S. Potter. Karen S. Potter, 72, of Dubuque, died on Sunday, November 28, 2021. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. Friday, December 3rd, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church, where a funeral mass will follow. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory of Dubuque is assisting the family. Dorothy M. Gabrainha, 98, of Dubuque, died on Sunday, November 28, 2021. Visitation will be held from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Thursday, December 2nd, at St. Joseph the Worker, where a funeral mass will follow. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory of Dubuque is assisting the family. Thomas J. Moses, Monona, Iowa. Thomas J. Moses, 72, of Monona, died on Wednesday, November 24, 2021. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Saturday, December 4th, at Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Monona. Complete arrangements are pending. Beverly A. White. Beverly A. White, 84, of Dubuque, died on Monday, November 29, 2021. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. Thursday, December 2nd, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Complete arrangements are pending. Funeral services. Michael J. Arthoffer, Piasta, Iowa. Graveside services, 10:30 a.m., Wednesday, December 1st, St. Catherine Cemetery, Dubuque. Janice L. Carroll, Asbury, Iowa. Visitation, 9:30 to 10:45 a.m., Friday, December 3rd, Church of the Nativity, Mass of Christian Burial, 11 a.m., Friday at the church. Roy E. Danz, Livingston, Wisconsin. Visitation, 9:30 to 11 a.m. today. Soman Larson Funeral Home, Montfort, Wisconsin. Services, 11 a.m. today at the funeral home. Ruth E. Fivecoat, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Celebration of Life, 11 a.m., May 7th, Dubuque Memorial Gardens. James E. Horner, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Visitation, 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday, December 1st, Fenimore United Methodist Church. Services, 11 a.m. Wednesday at the church. Bernard L. Keller, Stitzer, Wisconsin. Visitation, 2 to 5 p.m. Saturday, December 4th, and 1 to 2 p.m. Sunday, December 5th, Stitzer United Methodist Church. Terry J. Lang, Harpers Ferry, Iowa. Visitation, noon to 2 p.m. Saturday, December 4th at St. Mary's Church, McGregor. Mass of Christian Burial, 2 p.m. Saturday at the church. Louise M. McGranahan, Biola, Wisconsin. Visitation, 10 to 10:45 a.m. today, Cuba City, Wisconsin, United Methodist Church. Service, 11 a.m. today at the church. Donald L. Price, Dubuque. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. today, with a Masonic service at 7 p.m., and from 10 to 11 a.m., Wednesday, December 1st, Law Jones Funeral Home, Elizabeth, Illinois. Services, 11 a.m. Wednesday at the funeral home. And Harry W. Shady, Otter Creek, Iowa. Celebration of Life, 11 a.m. today, Carson Celebration of Life Center, Maquoketa. Turning to the sports page and boys prep basketball. WAMAC Conference Preview. Trailblazers ready for more after special run by Steve Ortman. Despite losing arguably its best player midseason, Dyersville-Beckman rallied and clinched its first trip to the Iowa State basketball tournament since 2007. Consider the bar officially set to a new level. The Trailblazers don't want to go another 14 years between state trips, and that journey opens tonight at home against Benton Community. Here is a capsule look at local teams in the WAMAC Conference this season. Dyersville-Beckman coach Michael Maloney, fifth year, 65-28. Last year, 16-8, 8-7, WAMAC key players, Patrick Gallagher, he's a junior, Logan Gedkin, he's a senior, Logan Burchard, senior, and Ryan Burchard, senior. Outlook. Despite the loss of All-State guard Mason White, Beckman rallied around each other to reach the state tournament last winter, and much of it was due to the breakthrough season of Gallagher. He turned it on during the postseason and finished with season averages of 13.6 points, 5.5 rebounds, and 2.3 assists per contest. But the Blazers have now lost two pivotal posts to graduation in Jack Gelling and Jacob Hermsen. So while the guard play should continue to be strong, how the Blazers reload in the paint will prove crucial to their season. While length and athleticism should benefit Beckman on the defensive end, a lack of height could be a problem in the rebounding department with those losses in the post. Which players step up and carve out a role alongside the veterans that played at state last season will be a key development in Beckman's chances at getting back. Maquoketa coach Matt Hartman is in his sixth year. Last year, he went 8-14 and 5-11 WOMAC key players. Mitchell Roeder, senior. Max Keller, senior. Ethan Coombs, senior. And Kale Wydell, senior. Outlook. The Cardinals graduated three important seniors from last year's lineup in Caden Atenza, Brady Digman, and Connor Becker, who represented the top three scorers and rebounders for the team a season ago. That leaves plenty of opportunities on the table for players to step into the bigger roles. Roeder led the Cardinals in assists last season with 2.9 per game, and Keller added 2.5 per contest. Both players, among others, will need to rise up in the scoring department. And West Delaware. The coach is Drake Schuring. He's in his second year. He's at 10-12. Last year, key players Blake DeMoss and Rob Loki, Luke Carroll and Jackson Wollert. Outlook, the Hawks graduated their top three producers in rebounding and top two in scoring and assists, with All-State guard Kyle Kelly being the most significant loss. DeMoss figures to be the player to step up the most after averaging 9.1 points and 3.2 assists per game last season. In prep bowling, Mississippi Valley Conference preview. New format, a game changer. Hempstead boys look to continue postseason success. By Jim Leitner. The postseason will take on a whole new look for boys and girls bowlers in Iowa this winter. Following the recommendations of coaches, the Iowa High School Athletic Association and Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union adopted a new format for the state qualifying and state meets to include separate individual and team events. Team events will feature Baker games, then a bracketed format at the state meet. Individual tournaments will be three games, including a bracket for the top eight individuals at the state. It presents more opportunities for bowlers to reach state and will present a more exciting tournament for everyone, Wallert coach Tom Kramer said. Bowling classifications for boys and girls have also been changed to move the largest 32 programs by enrollment to Class 3A, the next largest 32 programs to Class 2A, and the remaining teams to Class 1A. Here is a capsule look at the Dubuque Boys High School bowling season. Hempstead, coach Roger Poling. Last season, 3-6, 8th at Iowa Class 3A tournament. Returning letter winners, Ian Ninneman, Dakota Rupp, Hudson Orr, Cody Stackus, and Trenton Pusateri. Promising newcomers, Connor Warwick, David Odell, Gavin Wardle, and Nick Hinkton. Mustangs in college. Christian Byes bowls for defending national champion Hawkeye Community College. Outlook. Despite a rebuilding year and the strains of the coronavirus pandemic, the Mustangs finished strong and returned to the Iowa Class 3A state meet for the 10th time since the Iowa High School Athletic Association began sanctioning the sport in 2010. Hempstead returns solid leadership and experience and adds three freshmen with extensive youth bowling experience. The Mustangs' top four scorers from state all return. Senior, coach Chris Schultz, last season 7-17 overall. Returning letter winners, Mason Krieg, Logan Jasper, Aiden Betcher, Hunter Winner, and Michael Wolkall. promising newcomers Drake Reed and Matthew Poling and Carl Patters. Rams in college. Christian Merrick also bowls for defending national champion Hawkeye Community College. Outlook. The Rams return five bowlers with multiple seasons of varsity experience and figure to be a contender in the Mississippi Valley Conference this season. Krieg won a regional championship in Cedar Rapids before placing 38th in the individual competition at the state tournament. And Wallard coaches Tom Kramer in his 14th season and Jeff Kamitz. Last season, fourth at Iowa Class 1A state qualifying meet. Returning letter winners, Will Kamitz, Carter Hancock, and Nick Splinter. Promising newcomer, Aaron Klusner and Caden Bainbridge. Outlook, the Golden Eagles return three seniors with extensive varsity bowling experience who hope to take advantage of the new format for regionals and state. Klusner and Bainbridge have made big strides during the offseason and step in to give Wallard a solid varsity lineup. Western Dubuque, coach Grant Kramer, last season 12 and 5 overall. Returning letter winners Jude Ludwig, Nolan Vasky, Nick Sweeney, and Nolan Morrison. Promising newcomers Garen Kadolf and Ethan Potter. Bobcats in college, Jacob Butcher also bowls for defending national champion Hawkeye Community College. Outlook. The Bobcats will lean on a trio of juniors who bowled on the squad that narrowly missed the Class 2A state tournament last winter. Kadolf also brings extensive varsity experience after transferring from Dubuque Wallard. This is a young team that bowls well together, which could pay big dividends with the new state qualifying structure. Turning to girls prep basketball, Cascade returns veteran squad by Danny Miller. Here is a capsule preview of the area girls basketball teams competing in the River Valley and Upper Iowa Conference. River Valley Conference, Bellevue. Coach, Scott Jess. Last season, 20-2. Key returning players, Mariah Henke, Kalicia Deshaw, and Kaylin Deshaw. Promising newcomers, Claire Dunn, Jordan Beasley, Odessa Liebfried, Morgan Meyer, Delaney Dunn, Tegan Humphrey, Katie Dunn, and Adeline Leach. Outlook. The Comets graduated three of their top four scoring leaders from last year's team that came within a win of a state tournament berth. Hunicky returns as the sole senior that saw any significant playing time last season and will be looked upon as a leader to this fairly inexperienced group. Kalicia and Kaylin Deshaw were key contributors a year ago and will need to be even bigger factors this season if the Comets want to make another run. Bellevue will feature an up-tempo style of play, but the graduation of some key players from last year's team leaves them thin on varsity experience. Cascade, coach Mike Sconza, last season 15-7. Key returning players, Allie Hoffman, Megan Smith, Laura Oding, Taryn Hoffman, Alyssa Lux, Devin Simon, Maggie McDermott, Claudia Newman. Promising newcomers, Ella Oding, Margot Rausch, Josie Matternack, and Molly Rawling. Outlook, the Cascade team returns its two scoring leaders from last year's team that was 10 games above 500 in conference play, but were ousted by Dyersville Beckman in the regional semifinals. Hoffman will carry the bulk of the scoring responsibilities as they hope to avenge that postseason defeat by leading their team to a deeper run this winter. The Cougars also return a number of players that saw significant playing time last season, and that experience will be crucial as their roles increase this year. Coach Sconza likes his team's depth and hopes his younger players can bring some consistent scoring to the lineup. Upper Iowa Conference, Clayton Ridge. Coach, Ashley Funk. Last season, 9-11. Key returning players, Samantha Spielbauer, Molly Kahn, Whitley Harbor, Jalen Moore, and Camden Dutmeyer. Promising newcomer, Amira Millard. Outlook, the Eagles hovered around the 500 mark last winter and hope to make a leap in the Upper Iowa Conference standings this season. A few winning streaks this year could move them from the middle of the pack to the upper half of the conference. While they did graduate their two top scorers, Clayton Ridge brings back seniors Harbour, Moore, and Junior Dootmeyer, among other players who saw consistent playing time a year ago. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, November 30th, 2021. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening.